Welcome to Foxhole Symphony, a podcast about the transformational value of men in authentic community.
In our Foxhole, men are equipped to build relationships that foster belonging, accountability, and growth.
Stop believing the lie that you can thrive in isolation and instead,
join us on the journey from broken to whole.
Christ Jesus emptied himself, taking the form of a slave, being born in human likeness. Philippians 2, verses 5 to 7. In this passage, Paul references Jesus as emptying himself. Emptying is prelude to filling. The Son of God empties himself of prerogative, of divine rights, of status and reputation, in order to be the one whom God uses to fill up creation and creatures with the glory of salvation. A bucket, no matter what wonderful things it contains, is of no use for the next task at hand until it's emptied.
It's beautiful. Hey, welcome back to the Foxhole Symphony podcast. We are so glad to have you all with us. And on behalf of my co-host, Mark, this is Sarge. And we're very excited to be making history today with our first ever guest. And you guys are going to be, I think, blown away. And so I want to jump right in and introduce Pete Zaremba, lovingly known as Z. So that's how we'll probably refer to him today.
Z is live in the foxhole.
He is. He is. And so quick bio. Pete is a follower of Jesus. He is a business owner. And as a volunteer, he has given lots of his time. Both Mark and I have had many opportunities to experience his servanthood, his servant leadership, but he serves several transformational ministries specifically for men. And he's a student. He's a student of the path of inner change. And in addition to that, for fun, he enjoys fly fishing, especially with his two adult children, Claire and Jim. So welcome, Z. We're glad to have you with us.
Oh, man, it is great to be here. Thank you. I'm honored to be here. And, you know, it's cool that we're doing a podcast. I'd have come if you just said, hey, want to hang out in the basement? And I mean, we have never thought about this drive in here, right? Like, we've been together recently as October, all right, in the same space. Yep. But the three of us have never just sat down.
It's true.
And so, you know, before we started recording, we started catching up on what were the holidays like, right? And then, you know, what's going on with me? And immediately, you know, I realized why I love you guys so much. And that is that the very thing you're trying to articulate in this podcast, the nature of it is that we could go for months without seeing one another. The next time we're together, we agree that we're going to pick up where we left off. And when we share with one another, we're going to be honest about it. And because I know I'm loved. I know when I walked in here, there would be, you know, anything short of, I have plans to go hurt some people after this recording. I know that there would be nothing, and if we joke about that, right? But like, I know that anything short of that, that I would receive nothing but love, and that you guys are unquestionably for me. Mm-hmm. And what that does is it creates this freedom and this spaciousness. So now I can really be who I am. And you know, I've loved your guys' podcasts. I've listened to each of your episodes. One of the things I love about it is that the hope is that you're going to reach where I was, you know, for decades, which was a guy who used to love to, you know, I could talk, you know, if we were at a party, I would talk to people, strangers for, but it would be about my job, you know, maybe the New York Mets, a great restaurant I've been to, everything. And I could talk for hours about that. Right. And
in a very entertaining way, mind you.
Absolutely.
But what really mattered. Right. And so I think it took us like 20 seconds to get into, you, Sarge, you were sharing some stuff that happened. And, you know, one of the things you said is it was my worst fear. You talked about your, if you don't mind me saying, your daughter getting in a car accident.
Yes.
The total of the car. Yep. And like, you know, so I so love what you're doing. And here's the only thing I want to say as a guest that you guys could never say for yourself. I was saying this to people listening to the podcast. You know, what I admire most about you is your guys' authenticity. You know, in each one of your podcasts, I know your guys' life story. What people don't know, what they haven't seen that I have, is that both of you are so committed to serving others, particularly other men. And your credentials for this podcast are the same credentials I have today. And that is that we spent decades doing everything we could to screw our lives.
Amen, right? Brother. Amen. Yeah,
that, so Amen. So that, that's our credential.
That's all we got.
That's we've got a PhD.
Qualified.
Yeah. So we've got a PhD in how to fly the plane into a mountain. Mm-hmm. And that somehow, by the grace of God, that we've experienced healing. We've experienced joy. We've been given gifts. There's been reconciliation. There's been redemption to Amen. Incredibly difficult chapters. And my story, in spite of myself, rather than being this willing participant in writing those redeeming healing chapters, it's like almost every step of the way, it's me doing everything I can to say, I got this. And so when I hear your podcast saying, maybe there's a different way to do life. Maybe there's a way to be in community with other men, to be seen, to be real, to be authentic, to tell my truth, and to maybe let you see parts of my life that I would do anything to hide or to fix first and then talk about it. Like, let me tell you what I conquered, as opposed to let me share with you where I'm stuck and I can't get out. So the hardest three words for me, it mirrors the hardest command in the Bible for me to, the hardest three words for me to ever say is, I need help. I need help. Yeah. I can't do this. Which is another variant of that. And it reminds me of Psalm 46:10, be still and know I'm God. Yeah. That's the hardest command for me to, right? Be still, stop trying to fix this because you can't. Mm-hmm. And be still and let me in.
That's
and
beautiful.
Let your brothers in it.
By the way, we do provide duct tape right here in case you need to fix something.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, that's for you.
What's the pink ball for?
Actually, it's there's a story behind that, and it has to do with Mark and I and our brotherhood, our relationship. Love so that. There was a ministry called Feed the Need that Mark and I worked very closely together on. You're familiar with it.
I am.
It's a large meal packing event. And every time we did it for a number of years, Mark and I would show up like it was Christmas morning.
Yep.
Really, as the sun came up. I don't think we had to be there till 10 a.m. We were there at 6. Yeah. And we were in this gym where we were
empty gym.
Going empty before anything was there. The trucks were there, but nothing was unloaded. Right. No people, no nothing. And Mark would bring the pinky and we would just throw it against the wall. And play catch.
Just like the old timers on the curb. You know,
Yeah. Yep. Handball.
Handball. And it was that pinky. And he would bring it back every year.
Wow.
And there are people's names and signatures on it that over came time. Through over time who helped lead that weekend or week event. And it's kind of near and dear. And
just, I love that.
Yeah.
You know who treasures that ball almost as much as us? My son, Jack. Wow. Because Jack sees it and knows. And he just looks at me. 2 million meals in 5 days, Dad. That's what he says.
Yes. Yeah. God
remember
did
he
that.
Was doing marketing with Dennis at that time
yes.
and he was
yes.
in. My family, it just absorbed us. We all, right? Everybody jumped in.
So here's what I want to say. This is I'm so glad I asked. And the unpacked it had to do with this Feed the Need, which was an enormous, I mean, it was a miraculous thing every year. And the backstory too would be Sarge would come to us, yep. you know, when we'd get together during the month and be like, oh, you know, I don't know how this is going to happen. Like miracles had to like,
right.
You talk about be still. And so it's not, you were not still like you had a million things to do, but
I know God did it last year, but this year it's double the size. How's this going to happen? There's no way.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So let's just get to let's go to the final paragraph of the last chapter. Why would we risk, you know, what this podcast is letting men know is available? It's because when I begin to get healed, when I'm seen, when I begin to experience true intimacy, you see me at my best and my worst, and you say, Pete, I love you, and you're my brother, and I honor your truth, and it becomes my brokenness, and every seeming dark, unfixable thing in my life becomes the very bridge to encounter God in a way I never could have orchestrated on my own. And when some healing begins to take place, all of a sudden, right, I start asking, well, what now? Okay, this is great. Now what do you want me to do?
Right.
right? The purpose of what we're calling people into isn't so that 25 years from now, I'm sitting in a puddle in the corner crying about my dad not coming to a T-ball game, right? Mm-hmm. That might be a conversation I have, mm-hmm. But it's ultimately, right? He came to one or two. Now I'm teasing. But the reason is because here's the best way I can say it. Once you answer the question, who am I? Really, who am I? Mm-hmm. Which is what you guys have talked about. What do I do takes care of itself. Mm-hmm. My mission, my God-given mission, and you will be amazed. I mean, I love the story of that, of what that, you know, feed the need became, because it's an example. Like, for instance, I've got a friend who in Philly owned a law firm. But this guy was at the age where he was ready to retire, sell his law firm at a time when people should be looking at property in Florida, buying your best set of golf clubs, and, you know, go deep sea fishing every other day. This guy moves to the inner city of Philly, starts a ministry to volunteer their time to help with people who couldn't afford legal counsel, to expunge felons, to work on, you know, preserving their home. So another, he had this ministry where they would give free legal time to people, and then at the very end they'd say, hey, can we pray for you too? Like, and people would say, why are you doing this? Like, well, you know, we've really experienced the love of God, and we realize, you know, we followed Jesus, and Jesus was all about heading straight into the pain and suffering of others. And so we want to do that, because a man got so healed that now he's got strength, he's got reserve, he has more than enough to begin to say, Lord, what do you want me to do? So that's the I began at the end. Why would we ever do something that everything we've been trained as men to do goes against it, right? Mm. I grew up with the notion that if I ask for help, I'm weak. And that I grew up in a family where if you told family secrets, you got beat. I love my mom and dad. I know they love me, but I remember getting a beating for a kid for repeating family stories. So, you know, with that kind of conditioning, right, the notion of sitting down with even people I know, let alone people maybe I don't know, and beginning to share the deepest parts of my life, the parts of me that no one else knows, what my struggles are. And man, and I, you know, that goes against everything I can do, but why would I do it? What if there's a healing and an encounter with God that I can have in that context that I can't have in any other way?
That's perfect segue, because our listener has heard us talk about authentic community a lot, and I'm not sure it's a comfortable terminology, lexicon for a lot of men that we really want to reach. Give us your version. What comes to mind when you hear authentic community? Because we know it's a thread that connects us.
Here's what it is. So what do you say? You guys, so here's what one of the groups that the three of us were part of taught us, that, you know, there's always unspoken agreements when we get together with people. Like if I invited you over to my house tomorrow night to watch the national championship, right? I said, all right, we're going to have pizza, we're going to have, you know, beers, whatever it is. We're going to have, you know, we would know why we're getting together, right? And we would know what's cool and not cool, right? If we, depending on who's there. The kind of community that we're describing is a very intentional community that says we're going to make agreements to be real. We're going to be transparent. I'm going to share. So we're going to ask best friend type questions,
right?
And we're not going to hide, and we're not going to pretend that anything's better than it is. I'm going to give you as unfiltered and as raw my truth as ever. Here's your part of the contract, Pete. I'm not going to fix you. I'm not going to preach. I'm not going to judge you. Mm-hmm. All right. So I share my truth with you. And instead of you saying, hey, Pete, that sounds like really screwed up theology, right? So you're not going to correct me. You're just going to receive my truth. Again, apart from me saying, hey, I got plans to hurt myself or to hurt somebody else, you're just going to let me get my truth out.
Right.
And then in the midst of that, you're going to reciprocate and say, okay, brother, let me share my truth. And in turn, I'm going to ask you just to not judge me. Don't fix me. Right, you don't have to rescue me.
Listen,
just be present.
And if I could interject, part of the healing, right? There's the healing in the opportunity you have to speak freely, to confess, to be transparent, to be vulnerable in that environment. But then there's exponential healing in experiencing a response that's one of grace.
Yeah,
and
oh sure,
and comfort and love.
Yeah. I don't know if you guys have, I'm trying to think in my head, if I can remember if you guys ever talked about the topic of shame. I carried so much shame with me in my life. I don't know anybody else's story. I just know that I could think of things that would literally constrict my body, tighten my stomach. Mm. Like some unintelligible thing would come out of my mouth because like, I just, you know, I carried this, these experiences that were so vivid to me that go back 10, 20, 30 years. Here's what I want to say. I used to pray to God about them all the time. I would pray to God and I was honest with God about it, ask for healing in those things. I would confess those things, ask for forgiveness, ask for healing. And what eventually healed me of those shame experiences is the experience of sharing it to another person and having that other person just sit and hear it, not congratulate me, not minimize it, not say, oh, it's not that bad, but just hearing it and receiving it and staying in relationship with me. Right. Yep. And so where shame causes me to hide and to say, I've got to filter and hide and I can't let, because I know that if you see me the way I really am, you will get as far away from me as you can, get 911 on speed dial and like, you know, right. I'll be judged and I will lose relationship. It does the complete opposite.
Right.
Yeah.
That is healing. Hmm. And so the thing I want to say is not only couldn't I heal my own shame wound, but that God chose to heal the shame wounds of my life through other people.
Yep.
It was, I couldn't heal it on my own terms. You know, so to go 47 years with this thing, like I just don't need community. I like friendship, but I don't need anyone. Mm-hmm. I just know that that's a lie I've told myself.
Yeah.
I got this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How many times have we talked about that?
So you're referring to this sort of emptying, you know, this opportunity to share with another, this emptying. And, you know, the title of this episode we've entitled it The Cup of Suffering. Mm. And you've touched on this a little bit, but let's just go a little bit deeper into suffering. You know, what do we mean by that? I mean, obviously we believe that God doesn't cause suffering, but he certainly allows it and gives deep meaning to the suffering. Mm-hmm. And as a result, there's redemption. There's something that comes from it. Yeah. Right. And so let's talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. 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 Quick disclaimer at the front. And that is because I really want to, as we dive into suffering, you know, if we pivoted in another direction right now and said, okay, let's take an hour and just talk about how's God blessed you and given you incredible gifts that you never could have expected in your life, you know, it would be difficult to keep it to an hour. We'd have to give you a highlight reel.
Yep.
All right. So I would not define my life as a life of profound suffering. Having said that, right, I believe that in a sense, God, there's two hands of God. And one is this unconditional, merciful love, this infinite love that infinitely gives itself away. Right. Regardless of my worthiness, ability to receive me, even in the midst of my inability to receive it. But the other hand, as you said, is this allowing God doesn't, I agree. God doesn't cause suffering, but he sure allows, and being Christian and having faith, you know, doesn't exempt. You know, I've known men who have lost kids,
sure,
who've lost young kids, either in accidents or through illness, divorce happens, cancer happens. Good, hardworking people lose their jobs.
Real life.
Which is not exact. So when I think of suffering, I know that in my own life, I always wanted to minimize, you know, cause I could always think of somebody who had it worse than me. So I was helped one time by somebody gave a working definition of suffering is this: anytime I'm not in control, I'm not in control is a form of suffering. You know, if I'm diagnosed with cancer, I'm not in control. Now I can take steps to deal with that. But I think I like that working definition because that kind of changes the landscape. You know, in other words, like where I previously would say, okay, anything above this self-imposed threshold becomes suffering. Other than that, it's just normal life.
So rather than being relative to someone else's suffering.
Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah. Right. I'm not in control. And when you really think about what am I really in control of, that creates the room for a lot of suffering. A lot of, so I would suggest there's, so the question for the person listening to this right now is, you know, where do you see suffering in your own life? In the Gospel of John, John 5, there's this great scene at the Pool of Bethesda. Jesus finds a guy who's been there for 38 years. 38 years. For some people listening, that maybe exceeds their lifespan.
Right. Right?
As guys, so some scripture,
half of mine.
Yeah, right. So, but you know, there's some translations that say he was an invalid. The one I read this morning said very simply that that he was ill for 38 years. And Jesus asks an incredibly revealing question that on the surface looks unnecessary. He says, do you want to get well? Mm. Do you want to get well? Mm-hmm. And what I love about the question is, and then the guy in response, so apparently this pool, there was this belief that from time to time an angel would come and stir the water, right? Mm-hmm. And the first person in, then it was a race. The first person, it's almost comical, right? Yeah. The first person in.
It was like middle school at the community pool, right? After, during adult swim.
Yeah.
And then they blow the whistle.
Yeah.
First one in.
Exactly. Right? So the angel would stir the water and the first one in gets healed and everybody else, sorry, right?
You're next just
time.
Wet.
Next
yeah.
time.
Yeah.
So this guy says to Jesus, you know, like, oh man, you know, every time I can't get in, you know, the water's stirred, I'm trying to get in and somebody beats me to it. Right. And we all know then Jesus tells him, hey, pick up your mat and go. And the man's miraculously healed. But the reason I love the question of Jesus, do you want to be well? Is I know in my own life, I can see now, not never when you're in it, but in hindsight, the very thing that I would want healing of, if it's in my life long enough, starts to work for me. I get used to it.
Sure.
And now I can also even use that to make excuses for, well, you know, maybe this is why I drink so much. This is why it's so tempting to go in the office and, you know, to look at porn or to, because, you know, life's hard. Nobody gets me. You know, my marriage is tough. Things aren't happening at work. You know, why, you know, I worked for a guy for 20 years and struggled with such anger. You know, rather than sitting down and having a very honest conversation, it was just easier to hate this person and to be filled. And so, you know, it becomes this thing where I could have told you where I wasn't in control in my life. And I could tell you where I'm not in control in my life here. But on some level, the question is relevant to me. Pete, do you want to get well? Mm. Do you have any interest or is it working? Mm-hmm. Because it seems like, you know, yeah, you've got stuff you could complain about, call suffering, but you seem it's working for you. Mm. A friend of mine, Michael Cusick, wrote a book called Surfing for God. We were high school friends and he had started a ministry called Restoring the Soul in Colorado. And he said, look, I want to write a book, which later became a great selling book that's become one of the greatest resources in the Christian community for people struggling with sexual issues. And he said, but I need to take time off. I need guys who'll pray for me and financially support me. I said, I'm in, man. So months he would call me occasionally when he was stuck and we would just talk through some things. And so it's November and he's given me a PDF copy of the book and I'm reading it. And it's really, you know, to me, it's disrupting me, but I can't put it down. And it's, you know, it's asking questions that, you know, where have I been wounded? And you know, the whole premise of the book was beneath our most troubling behavior are legitimate God-given desires, right? The problem isn't my desire. It's God-given. The issue is, right, is that when my desires become a demand and I take life into my own hands, right?
Right.
And so I'm on a train going from Morristown to the city. I eventually want to get to Queens. It's November 2011. I'm going to watch the Giants play Green Bay Packers.
Oh, wow.
And they would go on to win the Super Bowl that year. But anyway, so I'm, and of course, if you're on a public train, what do? You sip whiskey. I went to a liquor store and I bought a small bottle of
whiskey. What do you do?
That's brown bag.
Exactly. So I'm on the train and I'm in a state where I'm, you know, slightly buzzed and I'm in a, Michael calls me out of nowhere and he says, hey, how's reading the book going? And I said, I'll be honest with you, Michael. I said, it's great, but I said the three words I am committed to never saying. I said, I think I really need help. I said, I'm a couple months away from my second divorce. I said, I've got a huge problem with my boss. I think this guy owes me a lot of money. So I fantasize about hurting this guy. I have such rage in my life. I'm this close to having an affair with a married mom. I hadn't yet. Do I look at porn? Of course I do. But it feels like one of the least of my issues. I drink until I fall asleep or pass out. I've done that for about the last 10 years. My justification is if I can get up at 5 a.m. and leave my company in sales, then I don't have a problem. You got a problem.
Right.
Right. Because I'm bringing home, I'm paying the bills.
Making it happen.
Yeah. I'm on the treadmill.
Were you just
going to say, don't distract me.
You were going to say, bringing home the bacon.
Yeah.
That's where you're
going to say. So the good news about telling a licensed therapist those sentences, they don't hang up, call the Jersey State Police, and they don't meet you at the Summit Station. Right? We know you're on there. Come out. Yeah. Right. So he says, hey, look, because, I really appreciate you sharing that. And again, it's exactly what we talked about before. You didn't hang up. You just said, hey, I'm so grateful you let me know what's going on. He goes, hey, look, I volunteer with this ministry. We're having a weekend. I really want you to pray about coming on this weekend. And I thought he was crazy. Like, a retreat. Right. That's what I need.
Right.
I need like radical surgery. Right? I need a transplant. I need a new operating system. Right. And So I go on this weekend and of course, we do exactly what we've been talking about here. You start this weekend and you make agreements that you're going to be real. And I was so desperate. I'm like, oh yeah, I'm in. I mean, I got to say I was at that point. I'm ready. Cause I knew.
Sure.
And so this particular weekend, you start with five areas of your life, deceit, fear, anger, sadness, shame. And after the first, the first half of this weekend, I remember sitting in a circle and I can't underscore this. I sat in a circle and I looked around and I realized, and I don't feel the emotion of it right now, but normally when I remember that afternoon, I'm filled with tears, but I sat in a circle and I realized that everything that had ever happened in my life, good, bad, somewhere in between, everything that had ever happened was meant to get me to that place. And everything belonged and I could forgive it and I could be grateful and that God had never left me. He was waiting for me in the very place I had been. Dostoevsky said, he's got a great quote. He said, God is waiting for you in the very place you've abandoned him, but where he's never abandoned you. And so I can't understand exactly what happened. All I know is nothing was ever the same after that weekend. Nothing was ever the same.
So you were saying that was not the beginning of your quest to authentic community.
You said, I made a choice. I would have never made a choice. I had to be invited by somebody that I knew loved me.
Okay.
Right. And that's kind of the secret sauce of this thing is what I realized is nobody was going to sign up. Like, you're not going to advertise. Hey, yeah. Come share your secrets.
That sounds good. I'd like to do that.
Yeah. I'd like to. How?
Run away.
How can I get in a little circle of people I've never met before other than they say they love Jesus? Itch. I'm going to take them at their word.
Right.
And that's what I want to say is that, and again, I go back to, I'm speaking hopefully to somebody who might be hearing this and just thinking about their own life and to say, is there anyone that you would trust, the claim is that you two men are two people that you can trust to say, look, we've experienced it. Mm-hmm. And, come and join us and sit in a circle where you don't have to pretend or hide anymore. Mm-hmm. Get off the treadmill, right? So 38 years, you want to get well?
Yeah.
Right? So this guy had been there for 30, right? So essentially Jesus was saying, look, I get it. I get it. I get it. Somebody beats you. You're looking at this. You're doing this on your own terms. You're from your own understanding, from your own, your ability, right? And so, are you willing to maybe go in a different direction? You're willing to do this a little differently?
Sure.
And because my heart is to heal you. And
so you go on this weekend and you come out and you are, you're healed. You're healed. And it's a new Pete, right? You're good. So, I mean,
version 2.0,
right? So obviously I'm being facetious, but there is healing,
yeah.
Right? There was emptying and there was filling with new healing. But as it relates to suffering and as you've kind of described it, you know, what's that process look like? This process of emptying and being filled and, you know, this process of offering our brokenness and our suffering really through surrender. I mean, you were crying uncle, as we all have.
Yeah.
All being the three of us in this room at a certain point and said, I need help.
Yeah.
Right. So what is that God's redemption of that look like? And then, you know, what's required of us? What is that process of suffering?
As a young kid, so I became a Christian when I was in high school, and the older guys who discipled me, who were great men, who I'm still friends with today, you know, they really made an impression on me that, you know, to walk this journey, you know, you need to have regular times alone with God where you're in prayer and you're in the Word. Even in my darkest days, my darkest year, I in my basement, in my office, in the mean streets of Peapack, New Jersey, there are journals, books and books and book and journals and page. And I used to take just like normal white, you know, like paper, you would, you know, and fold it in half and staple the edges and make them like of me journaling and cataloging the day, the time, my weight. I would weigh myself. That was important. And then like me writing to John, and the themes were like, oh God, you know, I confess to you, you know, the great themes were always my relationship to alcohol, my sexuality, my anger. I'm not laughing. It was like a broken record over like decades.
Right.
And it's cataloged. So like, I was in the Word. I was reading the scriptures. I was praying. I literally drew up a contract one time. I had a contract, signed contract. Never doing this again. Right? I'm going to be the opposite. I'm going to be a loving, attentive, world's greatest husband. Here I come. I'm signing the contract. I was, you know, what's the expression? You know, sick and tired of being sick and tired.
Mm-hmm.
And man, I'm ready for, you know, draw a line in the sand. And, you know, within a week, within 2 weeks, just to realize I can't do this. Mm-hmm. So, where do I bring this up? Prior to that weekend, it's not that I never sincerely said, look, I'm serious about following Jesus. I'm serious about living my life in a way where I am, you know, where I have some inner freedom, where, and it was just the complete in it, like this 30 guy for 38 years, who probably was filled with this sincere desire to get in there and just experience this healing that he thought. Right, I had in my head a way to get healed that involved me getting in, whatever it was. And the revelation that's changed my life is that what I never understood was the healing was waiting for me in community with other brothers. Yeah.
There's freedom. I mean, we were talking earlier about, you know, taking up our cross. Right. And what that, you know, what does that mean?
Right.
What does that mean? And, you know, the suffering that Jesus modeled on the cross, right. As Mark mentioned in that passage in the beginning, you know, giving up his divine rights, his prerogative status, reputation. Yeah. I mean, really had nothing going for him. How is that the model for us in our suffering?
Yeah. And here's, you know, there's a great expression, hidden in plain sight, right? The fact that a cross is present and that God, that Jesus says, you must carry it if you're going to follow me, is not evidence that I've done something wrong or that it's my brokenness or my sinfulness that got me here. Life's rigged in a way where everyone has a cross to bear. what becomes the issue, what becomes key is that that cross is meant to somehow free us from a part of ourself that's not our truest, deepest self. There's a part of us that cross is meant to crucify, to lose. By carrying that suffering, there's a part of me that has illusions about who I am and about how life is. And if I do it right, if I pray it right, no one in my life is going to get hurt. To go back to your story, right? If I pray it right, my daughter will never be in that car accident that I dread. Right? Mm-hmm. And that cross that you were asking, that it shattered the illusion,
right,
that you can pray protection over what happens to your daughter in a car, right? But that there is a way in the midst of holding that cross to encounter, you will find your deepest, truest reality in God, and that there becomes a humble dependence on, if suffering is that I'm not in control, the cross says, go deeper into it, mm-hmm, and give up. And not only is suffering not being in control, the cross says, allow yourself to be nailed to this and to hold it. Yeah. This isn't it, right? On the cross, Jesus becomes the lasting image from every human standpoint, right? From every possible human standpoint, he has lost. He is powerless. He is naked, bleeding. He has been conquered. But we know there's a whole nother side of that.
Right.
Right. So there's somehow what suffering requires to us is to hold the pain. So one of the things, there's a one-liner we love in one of the men's groups we're part of. It says, you know, whatever pain is not transformed, right? Whatever pain doesn't get transformed, we're destined to transmit. Mm-hmm. So for 47 years, the pain, whether I'm willing to admit or not, just gets spilled onto the people usually I love the most, or the person driving with me on 287, right? The unfortunate motorists who had to be around me stuck in traffic. But usually it's my wife and my daughter. I can think of when she was in high school, she's 28 now. And I've been forgiven for a lot of that, but it doesn't lessen the impact it had on her. Right. She was the recipient of my pain. And I think what Jesus on the cross is demonstrating was, you know, here's a man who not only we have no record of him doing the very opposite of what we would expect, reconciling relationships, forgiving the people doing this, and trusting that somehow this isn't the final chapter, mm-hmm, right? And the faith that it took, but, and we think of Jesus, you know, as the spiritual human, you know, Superman, right?
Yeah.
I don't believe that was the case. I believe when he cries out, you know, Father, why have you abandoned me? That he felt abandoned. That abandonment was real. Mm. But there was the faith that this is not the final chapter. Mm. And so I would say, listen, I'm no expert on this, but that suffering requires us to hold the pain of the suffering and wait for God's healing and resurrection. So we hold it. We don't say, I can fix this myself. Rather than engineering a plan, we allow ourselves to hold the pain to the place where we realize, I can give this over. I can surrender this and trust that resurrection will happen in God's time. And usually it's going to look different than the way I would have it.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
But that the good news is all suffering ultimately has a victorious outcome. I think the most dangerous thing we can do when we talk about suffering is say, here's why God allows suffering. I don't know why God allows suffering, but I want to say two things about my own life. I think this is a safe place to go. When I hold my suffering and wait for God's healing, it somehow softens me and makes me more spacious, right? In other words, it attunes me to a suffering that goes beyond just me and beyond just my little circle, and to realize that that suffering is a universal condition for anyone, and for all of God's creation. but I'm softened to it. I'm attuned to it. And the second thing that suffering does is to remember that I'm dependent.
And just to tie that back to authentic community, those very things, those very results of suffering enable us and lead us into true authentic community.
Yeah.
They enable us to really embrace it, participate in it, and bear the fruit from it.
We've talked about the journey to authentic community, and the journey is really the key word there. Mm-hmm. It's not the definition of authentic community isn't the most important part. It's that we seek that as part of this journey of healing. Mm-hmm. There's suffering involved, there's joys. And we refer to those as mountaintop moments, valley moments. Mm-hmm. We have them every day, mm-hmm. right? Actually in the same day.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
The metaphor we've chosen, as you can tell from the board and the podcast and the website, is Foxhole Symphony. So we're talking about foxholes a lot. Mm. We have identified Foxhole Z as a safe place, a place that you can bring your garbage. Yeah. You can pour it out. You can also receive it gracefully.
Yep.
Right? We understand there's healing there as well. Yeah. Tell us, in your words, what kind of foxholes have you been part of? What who are these guys? Where do you go for that safe place?
Yeah. Oh man, what a great question. So and so the whole idea of Foxhole Plaza, we're in a battle, right? That there's right, that outside of the foxhole, you're vulnerable.
Bullets are flying.
Practically speaking, I'm my own biggest enemy. I'm my worst enemy. The guy in the mirror. Right. My ability to deceive myself, my ability to hide, my ability to keep secrets, not good secrets, but you know, right. Or I got the whatever. So that's the first thing I want to say about the foxholes that I'm in. So if I'm my worst enemy, the foxholes that I've been a part of, and certainly you guys have been a part, like this is a foxhole, right?
Yep.
What we're doing. Let's say that nobody listens to this podcast. Let's say you play it. And it's the tree falling in the, you know, does a tree make noise in the desert? Is there,
no one's
is
there.
A podcast a podcast if nobody listens to it? Right? What right. if nobody listens to this podcast? You know what? Like, I already know, like in my heart, right? And I've told the story that I've told this morning, you know, 100 times, but I feel loved this morning. I feel affirmed. I feel free. I feel more whole. Just because we sat and we talked about what's real. Right. But, you know, so that weekend, right, when I came back, it's funny, I did that weekend in Colorado. I didn't know that there were 60 guys, pretty much all men that you guys knew, who were in Jersey, who had been on that weekend. So I'm reaching out to these guys in Colorado. Hey, my life changed. What do I do now?
I need a foxhole.
Yeah, I literally left messages. It's funny. I don't want to out anybody here, but I left messages to a guy who was in charge of, like, you know, putting people in touch. So how do you continue on this path? If this weekend meant something, there's a, you know, we're not going to. And so I literally like left this guy a voicemail like, hey, you know, you guys changed my life. And now what do? You know, I'm here in Jersey. and then to
alone.
So I go on this thing, this second phase this weekend. And then as I'm leaving, somebody says, hey, say hi to a mutual friend of ours, a guy named LC. The next Saturday I'm sitting couple miles from here.
Right.
Right. And that became a foxhole for me. I went back to my home church in Morristown and I told, you know, two of the deacons there, okay, everybody, every man with a heartbeat who can fly needs to go to Colorado and get on this weekend. And they were like, you know, son, you know, it's not going to happen. One of them, great man named Brian, who is a neurosurgeon, not just neurosurgeon, a famous neurosurgeon in New Jersey, said, Pete, I can't do that, but I've always wanted to have a men's group. Why don't you take what you, are there any principles you learn? Mm. And so we started a men's group that meets once every month, every second Saturday of the month. We started in March 2013. Yesterday, we have never missed. We've never missed a month. And so this March, it'll be, what is that? It'll be 9 years.
9 years.
And so that's a foxhole. And wow. And for many men, you know, so there's guys who've like, so the nature of these foxholes are, there's a certain time in your life where you never miss. And it's hot and man, I got to be, like my life depends on
yep.
my well-being.
Yep. Right?
And then there's times where I haven't been in 4 or 5 months, maybe I'd like to go. Or, you know, no, God's calling me to do something else right now. So it's not like, right. And in other words, men have come into this thing and like some of them, because they know I lead it, they'll be, oh, yeah, I'm sorry. I haven't been to the men's group in like a year. I'm like, that's fine. But when it's there when you're ready, that's become a foxhole.
Sure.
They all have something in common. And the commonality is we are going to agree to relate to one another below the surface. We're just not going to hide. And we're going to make this welcome. We're going to practice intimacy and you can't lose, right? And if you're open to it, you'll discover something about yourself and you'll go home and you will be able to love the people in your life who need it. You know, I co-own a company and, you know, I will relate differently to the people who I work with. I relate differently to myself. And I joked earlier about my driving, you know, it's kind of cool. You know, something happened to me. It's funny, right? Something happened to me a couple of years ago. I was in a parking lot and a guy did something incredibly stupid. And so to keep him from ramming into me at a high speed, because he didn't see me, he did this big, huge backward, like huge. It was insane, right? I had to lay on my horn. And he stops like within like, you know, angstroms.
Of your life.
Which are a millionth of an inch. Of my front bumper. And then he pulls around and he rolls down the window and he empties his cup of he's screaming. He's enraged, right? And it happens so fast, like I'm just like witnessing it, right? And then he takes off. And first of all, and this is how I knew that God was active in my life and that in spite of myself, I wasn't angry at the guy. I just thought, oh man, that was me. I've done that. And then I thought, man, I hope when he gets home, whoever he's going to walk into the kitchen with, he had picked up some takeout Chinese. I hope that like, you know, they don't get what I got. And the other thing I realized was, you know, that had nothing to do with me. The guy didn't know, like if I didn't lay on the horn right now, I'd be getting his insurance information. But my point is that's one little tiny microcosm of, you know, why do we go to the foxhole? So yeah, are there foxholes in my life? Absolutely. And I would say this, you have two options if you're listening to this podcast, right? And here's, you can create your own foxhole. And we can help you do that. Like if there were people listening and say, hey, look, what are the agreements? What do they look like? You guys could actually.
Absolutely.
Right? Sure.
And so I would say either start your own foxhole or come visit another one, be a guest, and then either stay or start your own. In other words, this isn't about membership. It's not about growth. We have no.
Right? Exactly.
This is the kingdom of God. We're not growing something. This is not a scheme, a pyramid scheme.
Right. No commission.
Almost said the A word there, you know, yeah. Right. This is not about, this yes. is not about, you know, this is not, we're not promoting an organization.
No.
We're promoting a way of relating that says, if you're done walking alone and you're done trying to do it yourself. And if you can't get in the pool when it's stirred, there's another way.
It's exactly right.
There's another way. So I hope that answers the question.
That's a great answer. Thank you. Here's the next question.
All right.
We're looking for a two-word theme or title for describing your journey with God today.
Yeah.
And a one-minute why. Why is that the theme?
Yeah, be present.
Be present.
I've spent almost all of my life processing the past or planning for the future. And it robs me from being present. So the only moment I have is the present. That's it. To me, the greatest thing that Jesus calls us to do is to be present. Jesus modeled it. To be present to the moment, not enslaved to the past, not in fear about the future, so I can somehow be of service to God and just be present. Be present.
Perfect. Thanks so much, man.
You bet.
So before we kind of begin to wrap up here, you've touched on this quite a bit, but is there maybe one final message that you would give to men other than be present, which is great.
Yeah.
In general, you know, you've had vast experiences in many different types of foxholes that build stronger men. So for those seeking authentic community. Yeah.
And I'll be accountable to God for what I'm going to say here, right? Because I'm going to promise something. I promise any man listening to this who's never experienced what we're talking about, that there is a reality that exists that we are created in a way where we will to experience all that God would have for us to experience in this world involves being in community with other men in a way that transforms us, that frees us, strengthens us, commissions us in a ministry. Life for me has become, it's not that there's not hardships. I've shared with you guys, you know, something that I've been recently confronted with. It's been painful, but you know, my life is so beyond anything I could have ever imagined it being 10 years ago, 15 years ago. The level of joy, the level of purpose, the level of a sense of being a part of a bigger story, the healing in my life, the joy I feel, right? Like I'll say this, you will see things you didn't know existed when it comes to healing, beauty, mm-hmm. right? I mean, it's just, you know, when we serve on these weekends, we come off and I'm driving home. I'm like, who gets like, it's like the greatest thing in the world. We're all volunteers, but it's like, you feel like you just hit the jackpot in terms of what you've been able to experience. So that would be what I'm saying. I'm in sales, so I'll own it. I'm trying to say to the guy who's maybe sees himself as, you know, peering through a window on what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Come and see, check it out.
Yeah. Thank Great. You. I just want to thank you. I can't thank you enough. You've touched on so many aspects of, you know, what Mark and I talk about, or at least want to convey and have experience in our, not only in our relationship, but in our lives and in some of the very same foxholes that you referenced. It's been incredible to have you because you've been so influential in both of our lives. And speaking for myself, you've been such an instrumental part of learning to hold my suffering in a way that's so freeing. And when you talked about being commissioned, being catalyzed as a result of that, and if there's no way I could have imagined, I have not arrived, but who I am today, I couldn't have possibly imagined 10 years ago or 20 years ago or 30 years ago. And it's only as a result of the work that God has done in my heart through the healing offered by Him, but through men in my life like you two. And so I'm eternally grateful, and it's so cool to sit here with you this morning and share some of your perspective and wisdom and your true authenticity with the four people that listen to this podcast. Basically my parents, and then Mark has one other friend, and then there's some other stranger that listens. So
yeah, because I'm a narcissist, then I will share it with, just so people will hear my voice, I'll be sharing it with everybody.
There you go. There you go.
I'll be sharing it with strangers.
Long list.
Yeah.
Well, God will use that too. Thank you, bro. Your perspective is awesome. Really, really glad we're in this foxhole together. For me, we don't talk every day. We don't talk every month, right? But there's a connection there tied to this journey that we're on together. You're a rock star for me. So I want you to just, you know, take that and let it wash over you and drive home safely.
Thanks,
it's
brother.
Great to be with you.
It's been great here. And so my hope and my prayer for you guys is that this podcast will continue, and that it'll be a tool that God uses to invite men into the very thing we've all experienced. So thank you all. Thank you both for having me.
Amen.
Today in episode 5 with Peter Z, we took a close look at the suffering in our lives. Here are a few of the things we learned. We might define suffering as that which we can't control, whether it be a result of our own doing or simply circumstantial. While God doesn't cause suffering, He certainly allows it. As we lean deeper into our suffering, rather than denying it, God often reveals to us a renewed sense of our true self. And lastly, by emptying our cup of brokenness, putting a voice to our suffering with others in a safe, non-judgmental space, we find healing as we experience love and grace in others. This transformative process leads to wholeness and ultimately equips us to be used by God. Make it a great day.
If you enjoyed today's episode, please share it and invite others to the Foxhole. You can find us wherever you download your favorite podcasts. Be sure to subscribe so you know when new episodes drop, and please rate us and comment there too, as it'll help us get found by others who could benefit. Find, follow, and like us on your go-to social media networks by searching Foxhole Symphony, or visit foxholesymphony.com to make it super easy to find us. Drop us a line with feedback, questions, topic requests, who knows? Maybe you'll be a guest on a future episode. In the meantime, prepare to move, embrace discomfort, and just be you.